Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, for the past several programs, we've been talking about middle age marriage. And last week, we talked about staying married if you're no longer in love. This week, we're going to talk about another common challenge in established marriages, and that's bringing your spouse along in midlife renewal. What if you've transformed your primary emotions and outlook on life from negative to positive, but your spouse or life partner remains stuck on negative? Not a very pleasant situation, is it? Let's say it's a Monday morning and you wake up happy to be alive, you love your job and you're ready to challenge the work week, but your spouse breaks your mood. First of all, he talks about the home-based project that you failed to complete over the weekend, and then doesn't like your attire or the way that you combed your hair, and then makes a remark like, "You'll have a great day socializing with your colleagues at work while I'm stuck at home cleaning house and walking the dog." And these days, the one going off to work is not always the husband, is it? So it's painfully obvious that your spouse does not share your newfound zest for living, and you've asked him or her to join in your quest for midlife renewal, at least give moral support, but so far not the slightest hint of cooperation. And your spouse complains at every turn, makes derogatory remarks about others, gossips incessantly and constantly, seems to be challenging you for a fight, and as time passes, continual confrontations with a negative spouse can torpedo your chances of sustainable personal midlife renewal. And you love your spouse and you want to share an energetic and joyful life together, but how do you break through? Well, I'm not a trained psychiatrist, but here are a few possible strategies. Some of these I've tried myself, although my wife's more positive than I am, so it doesn't really apply here. But the first suggestion is, following a spouse's negative outburst, demonstrate by your reaction that you will not respond in kind. You know it takes two to carry on a fight. And this doesn't mean that you should ignore your spouse or turn your back. Instead, remain silent, listen intently, and try to understand the real reason for your spouse's anger or concern. Acknowledge that you hear and understand your spouse's point of view and can see that he or she is very upset, and suggest discussing the matter after both of you have a chance to cool down, and commit to a definite time to talk it over and work things out, and then you better follow up on that commitment or things will only get worse. And you may be caught completely off guard by your spouse's sudden expression of anger, but are you willing to acknowledge that you may share responsibility? Your spouse's argument may at least partially be valid. Do you remain in touch with your life partner's sensibilities? Are you genuinely concerned about how he or she feels? And after cooling down, when you actually sit down for that promised frank discussion, really listen. Let your spouse make his or her point before you interrupt with your response. You know, that's a problem I often have when talking things out with my wife when we have a disagreement. I always am thinking ahead to how I'm going to refute what she says before I really listen closely to what she's saying. I'm sure that's a problem for a lot of us. And seek out the root cause of your spouse's anger and unease, I should say, where she's really coming from or he's really coming from. And don't be too proud to accept your share of blame or say, "I'm sorry," and check hurt feelings and preconceived conclusions at the door. It's essential to demonstrate a genuine interest and concern in your spouse's point of view, whether you agree or not. And if possible, agree to concentrate only upon the present dispute. I know this is a problem that I frequently have. We get into arguments over something, and then one of the spouses will raise something that happened years ago that hurt his or her feelings, or that he or she blames you for, and that's just accomplishes absolutely nothing. And presuming you still care demonstrates your ongoing love with complete sincerity, and state that your desire is to build a future together, and you want to work things out as best for both of you. And if one or both professes to have fallen out of love, you still can agree to treat each other with utmost respect and dignity. And here's a warning: never attempt to tell a spouse or life partner why they think the way they do. You know, you're not a trained professional. I'm not a trained professional. And if you want to make another person mad, as my wife sometimes does with me, talk like you've gotten inside their brain and know what's motivating them. That's just not the way to do it. You want to learn from them what's motivating them, not tell them. A second suggestion is to understand your spouse's point of view, and this is really essential. You know, only God has a full and completely accurate perception of reality, and truth be told, do any of us view the world with anything close to 20/20 vision? When you disagree with your spouse, it's more than likely the two of you view the world through very different perceptions, maybe something going way back to your heredity or what happened in early childhood. So the very next time a major marital dispute arises, silently repeat to yourself, not so your spouse can hear, but silently, if I were, and name your spouse Betty, Bob, whatever your spouse's name is, if I were blank, I would be upset right now because, and reflect upon every single reason that your life partner might be angry or unhappy, given his or her role in your marriage and their perception of reality, and view the present situation through your spouse's eyes. Tough to do, but essential. And I know it's natural to believe your own point of view is the only sensible one, but you may consider your spouse's position is outrageous, but is it really? Over time, as you faithfully and consistently imagine yourself in your spouse's shoes, guess what? You may experience a shocking revelation. There may indeed be more than one correct answer or solution to the problem after all. You may recall on last week's program, we talked with Harvard-trained psychiatrist Dr. Claudia Louise about irreconcilable differences that occur in every marriage, and it makes no sense to hold unrealistic expectations of your mate because he or she wasn't created to perfectly fit your mold. Wise couples recognize each other's foibles, then work around them. Acknowledge your husband and wife can sometimes be a complete idiot, as you would put it, on certain issues, and has a few habits that you abhor, and I bet you have some ideas and ways of doing things that your spouse can't stand either. Understanding and acknowledging hurt feelings, irreconcilable differences, and where your mate is coming from will go a long way to solving marital disputes. You need to accept each other for who you are, and for flying far better than flying off the handle trying hopelessly to win your spouse over, which never seems to work. Here's a third suggestion. Think about the roles you play in your marriage. Every one of us hold back a few innermost thoughts and emotions, even from our spouse and from those we love. In every relationship, including husband and wife, we are actors playing a role. And here's a question to ask yourself. In my marriage today, what role do I most often play around my spouse? And a second question, is this the proper role for today? You know, when you were first married, ideally you assumed a multifaceted role. This sounds pretty perfect, but as close to this as possible, it would be great if you were equal life partner, passionate lover, closest confidant, and intimate lifelong companion. But as a marriage matures, the husband-wife relationship may strengthen or weaken, but it seldom, if ever, remains the same. And I know the birth or adoption of children changes everything radically when you become not just lovers, husband and wife, but also mom and dad. But now that your kids are fully or nearly fully grown, is there any good reason not to bring one-on-one intimacy back into your marriage? It may have been several years ago, but you chose your spouse as that one person to spend the rest of your life with. And if that was the case then, why is it not now? Is your spouse the one who has changed, or is it you? Things to contemplate for sure. Here's another suggestion. Over the next few days, make your spouse the center of your attention. So many times, you know, when a spouse expresses anger over every little thing, what he or she is really asking are questions like this. Why are you ignoring me continually? Why do you never listen to what I have to say? Why are you so wrapped up in your own career and your own interests, yet so unconcerned about mine? And maybe the saddest question of all, don't you really love me anymore? That may be what your spouse really is asking in anger. Isn't this the perfect time to lovingly demonstrate that your husband or wife remains central to your life? But how? Well, over the next several days, make your spouse the center of your attention. Spend time alone together and genuinely listen to your spouse without interruption. Treat him or her with kid gloves. Demonstrate sincere interest in his or her routine, emotional state, how she feels that day, and daily challenges that he or she faces. Bury your own agenda this weekend. It won't kill you. And are you prepared, at least for now, to place your spouse's interests and emotions on the same pedestal as your own? Boy, that would be a challenge for some of us, wouldn't it? Guess what? You'll begin to notice your spouse is sacrificing for you. Try this experiment today. Approach your mate with absolutely no self-serving personal agenda. Come right out and say it. You mean all the world to me. Ask him or her this simple question. What can I do to ease your burden and to make your life more enjoyable today? See how good this offer makes you feel and observe how your loved one reacts. I'll make you this bet, as a matter of fact. As time passes, a sincere shift of attention from self to your mate will pay dividends far beyond any psychic investment that you need to make. And if I'm wrong, at least you gave it a good college try. Here's a fifth suggestion. Imagine the ideal mate for your spouse today. Here's a novel approach. For the next few moments, or even longer than that, lose yourself completely. Stop asking yourself, what's in this relationship for me? Playing the role of casual observer, ponder the question, who is the perfect soulmate for my spouse at this point in his or her life? And if the two of you have never met, who would your spouse choose today as a perfect mate? What personality traits would this ideal life partner demonstrate? Would he or she be dominant or submissive? Would the ideal mate be driven primarily by career or by family and relationships? How important would a six-figure income and or wealth be as a factor in who the ideal mate would be? And what are an ideal mate's favorite hobbies, outside interests, and recreational activities? Where would the ideal spouse like to vacation, and what would they like to be doing on a vacation? An extrovert or an introvert? Prefer socializing or spending time alone together as a couple? And how important is sexual intimacy at this point in your spouse's life? Now comes the hard part. Place yourself in the picture. How well do I fit the profile of my spouse's ideal life partner? And if the present match is far from ideal, how much am I willing and able to change? The ultimate challenge is how to promote your spouse's emotional health and well-being without sacrificing your own persona, core values, and aspirations. Can it be accomplished, or is the gap simply too wide? And no, I'm not suggesting you sacrifice all. You are not Casper Milquetoast or Edith Bunker. In fact, complete sacrifice of personal goals and aspirations is totally counter to the give and take required in any truly successful marriage. It's perfectly all right to strive for what you want in marriage, in your marriage, as long as you respect also your spouse's emotions, her needs, or his needs, and aspirations. Your spouse is not right all the time, and you're not always wrong. The two of you share responsibility for navigating the rough patches and resolving the disagreements, and be willing to acknowledge those irreconcilable differences that currently pop up, and stop playing tug-of-war, which leads nowhere. Successful marriages thrive by most often meeting in the middle and on rare occasions agreeing to disagree. The key, both of you and your spouse must be willing on occasion to give in and sacrifice a small portion of self for the other, and you must accept each other for who you are, warts and all. And I'm not implying you have any physical warts on your face, but we must accept our spouses for who they are rather than trying to change them all the time. And a word of caution, no matter how hard you try, a strained marital relationship won't heal overnight, especially if one spouse is positive and the other negative. We tend to marry, after all, a person whose essential nature and general outlook on life corresponds with our own. And if you are a reformed pessimist and you married a fellow chronic downer, you will need to demonstrate to your spouse time and again the benefits of a positive outlook on life. But don't give up. More times than not, your optimistic attitude eventually will rub off on your spouse. Well, what if all efforts fail to bring your spouse along to a joyful, positive outlook on life? Before giving up, you may wish to seek outside counsel from your family priest, pastor, or rabbi, or from a professional marriage or family counselor. But as a general rule, marriage counseling proves effective only if both husband and wife sincerely want to participate and are open-minded to change. Do both of you want to preserve and strengthen your marriage? Are both of you willing to open up to a counselor? And are both of you open and receptive to trying something new? Certainly, if it's not working now, it doesn't make much sense not to try something new, does it? And if not, counseling probably is a waste of your time and money. Let's face it, in some instances, no amount of counseling or cooperation can repair a broken relationship. And right now, I'm not talking about infidelity, which is a whole different subject, but the two of you simply may have grown apart, and if one or both of you don't want the marriage preserved, then there's not much point in trying to preserve it, is there? Should separation and divorce become inevitable, here are a few further suggestions. I'm just full of ideas today, aren't I? First of all, do not file for divorce before adequately testing a trial separation. Before that final split, determine whether living apart really is working out for both of you and, even more importantly, for your children. You don't burn any bridges before you totally test out the consequences. Second, if at all possible, negotiate any divorce settlement as a win-win proposition. You know, there's no need to show up your ex, and there's no need for him or her to show you up. Treat your former life partner as someone you once loved, admired, and cherished, and ask for like treatment in return. You certainly deserve it. And once that divorce is final, do not squander 1 hour harboring resentment, expressing anger, spreading rumors, or seeking to harm your former life partner, even if she or he was unfaithful, because refusing to let go of negative emotions hurts you far more than it will hurt your ex, and it also hurts your children, obviously. And above all else, never forget that your children, even if nearly or fully grown, always come first. They didn't choose you as parents, you chose them. And as one final word of caution, make certain that your divorce is final, and I'm talking about emotionally as well as practically. You may need to cooperate on what's best for the children, but you can be civil about that. And one moment spent getting even or reliving a painful past, is a moment squandered from building on the positive lifestyle and new cherished relationships you so richly deserve. Furthermore, agonizing over divorce can be extremely harmful to your health. Studies have shown that they perhaps can even bring on a stroke or a heart attack, and you don't want that, do you? And here's one final suggestion before we move on to this week's guest. I implore you to forgive your estranged spouse or ex-spouse for the divorce, for your spouse's affairs, if he or she had one, or any past affronts, real or imagined. Also, if you assign yourself part of the blame for the divorce, forgive yourself. In order to complete your positive emotional recovery, you will need to bury any lingering conflict or hard feelings. And there are three sound reasons to forgive yourself and your ex sooner rather than later. The first reason, forgive yourself and your ex to benefit you. For your own health, peace of mind, and spiritual well-being, you just must cleanse your mind and soul of all bitterness. Second, forgive to benefit your ex and anyone else who may have wronged you, including the new love in your ex-spouse, the one she or he left you for. Because if your ex-spouse suffers from a guilty conscience, your acknowledgement of forgiveness may help ease his or her burden. And if possible, communicate your forgiveness in person or through a trusted intermediary, and be sincere. And third, forgive your ex for the benefit of innocent third parties, including your offspring. They are not the ones responsible for your divorce. They have suffered long enough listening to you moan and complain, and blaming your spouse can be especially toxic for your children, even if they're grown. They want to love both of you. Excuse me. And don't want mom or dad criticizing the other constantly. I know recovering from a divorce and moving on often is far from easy, but it's well worth the effort. And if you're seeking middle-age renewal, you can ill afford to dwell upon a breakup which may have occurred weeks, months, or even years ago, or the began to break up years ago. It's time to move on, and lingering bitterness can present a fatal roadblock to an otherwise successful journey to a healthy, purposeful, and joy-filled second half of life. So following divorce, it's high time to forgive, let bygones be bygones, and move forward to new positive relationships. But enough about divorce. Our guest today will talk about ways to make that marriage grow over time, and that's a far more pleasant outcome than divorce. And we have a whole chapter on bringing loved ones along on renewal, plus much more in my book, A Midlife Challenge Wake Up by Roy C. Richards. And you can check it out on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or on our website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com. And on our website, you can obtain yourself a free gift just by indicating your interest. Well, that's enough about all the health risks related to divorce. How about, are you husbands ready for some ideas on how to avoid divorce, actually strengthen your marriage? As most married men would agree, when it comes to men, women, and marriage, nothing is simple. But my next guest, Jerry Springberg, who was married to his dear departed wife, Nancy, for 54 years, says he's learned a few basic rules for us husbands, and he's here today to share them with us. And Jerry Springberg spent 30 years as a highly successful insurance and financial planner, a top-of-the-table status in the million-dollar round table, which is very prestigious in itself. He successfully balanced work and family. He and his wife, Nancy, raised three sons, and he continues to enjoy blessings of his grown children and grandchildren. And he's author of the book, Getting to the Top, An Optimist's Keys to Success in Business, Family, and Life. I love that title. Hello, Jerry, and welcome. Lord knows we can use a few more optimists in these times when we're bombarded with bad news.
That's true, Roy. One thing I found out that when I first saw my wife, I think it was love at first sight. I mean, I was back from Korea, yeah. And some of my friends had gotten married, and I was in love. I was in love with that lady, but how to meet her? She was on the dance floor. I love to dance, by the way.
Oh, that's good.
And so I figured how to meet her. So I ran over to the lemonade stand. She and her girlfriend were walking over to the lemonade stand. And guess what? As I turned around with two cups of lemonade, there was her and her girlfriend. And I said, would you like some lemonade?
I thought you were going to say you spilled it all over.
I got a phone number, but she was busy. She had two other boyfriends.
Oh.
My father asked me to go to Atlantic City to a dry cleaning convention. That's the business he was in.
I see.
I wrote her a letter from there. Dear Nancy, I miss you.
Yeah.
I'll call you as soon as I get home.
That's an interesting.
And you know what? When I got home, I was the only boyfriend.
Oh, great. And that was just after you met her that one time, or had you been on a few dates? Oh, wow.
No.
You must have been pretty irresistible.
I had never.
Well, as a veteran of half a century of marriage, one that remained solid until death did you part, what are some basic rules you learned, tips that are still relevant today that can help us, some of us other husbands, keep our marriages together?
If you can give your wife something that she's not expecting at an unexpected time, she'll get to love you more.
Oh, I see. Any ideas on what,
well,
example?
One thing I did, I had a little argument with her, and she was right. She wrote me a letter, and she was right. I went to the florist, and I had a bud rose delivered to her desk every day for 5 days.
Oh, that's interesting.
My God. She looked at me, and she was in love.
Yeah, that's, they always say roses are great for ladies, but
that's right. Another thing was renuptial. Our 40th anniversary, we were in Lake Havasu City. We went to one of the bigger casinos in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
and we got there Monday. I had a nice place to stay on the 18th floor.
Oh wow!
We could look down and look at the water show, and then we could look up Las Vegas Boulevard. And
yeah.
it was in the corner. It was a very nice location. That was Monday. Saturday, she didn't realize that we were having a renuptial. It was a big surprise.
Oh, she didn't realize. That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah. We were actually going down the hall towards the wedding chapel. She didn't know we were going there. And I noticed on the wall it said Springburg Renuptial, and she was between me and the wall, and I started to talk to her so she wouldn't turn around and look at the wall. And as we turned the corner into the room, instead of her three sons, her mother was there, two sisters and their husbands and family were there. My sister was there with her husband, and she was just amazed.
Yeah.
I said, "Honey, we're doing our renuptial." I even had a priest there to do it.
Oh.
I had the whole shebang.
Yeah, I hope my wife isn't listening, and she'll probably want me to do that. Maybe I should. That sounds like a great. Great idea, actually, and you don't have to wait till your 50th anniversary. You did it on your 40th, you said.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is you do something for your wife that she's not expecting at an unexpected time.
Yeah, that's
and she'll
certainly
love you more and more.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you also say it's important to know how to dance, because you call dancing romance standing up. And
That's right. As a matter of fact, we won some dancing contests while we were married, as a matter of fact. And it was just, I mean, some people came over to me and said, "Jerry, I didn't know you knew how to dance like that."
Yeah.
So it was interesting. And
my wife and I were on a cruise a couple of years back, and we saw this Chinese-American couple that were wonderful dancers. They were out dancing together, and we talked to them later. Turned out they'd been married for years, but they just loved to dance together, and you know, were so good at it. They were so impressive, and so smooth, and it's a wonderful night. They were also extremely happy and warm individuals that you could tell were very happy together.
I suggest that any husband that's listening to this should learn how to dance if he doesn't dance or he doesn't want to dance. I think that's probably like you just said, Roy. Dancing is romance standing up.
Yeah.
And you can't know what good it'll do to you when you get home. After all, you've been hugging her all night. It just leads one thing to another.
Yeah, that's true. And everyone watches Dancing with the Stars now on TV, but it makes a lot of sense rather than just sitting on your can watching to get out there and do it yourself. That'd be a surprise. Take dance lessons and come home to your wife and show her that you're a good dancer for a change rather than stepping on
her
feet.
That's right. Now, Roy, good health is important to a relationship also.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
You got to eat green vegetables. That's very important to you.
Yeah, when you have good health, I think it picks up your whole attitude and your whole day.
That's right.
And makes it so much easier to get along with your spouse and get along
that's
with
right.
other people as well. But
that's right. That's right. Also, exercise is very important.
Yeah, I love to see couples out, even walking or jogging or you know, exercising together. I think that's great.
That's a nice relationship.
Yeah. Well, disagreement over money and finance is one of the primary causes of marital turmoil and divorce. What's the best way for a couple to work through financial problems when money is tight? I know in your book you mentioned you had a tough time in the 1970s. How did you and Nancy work through those? Any suggestions on that?
Well, what happened was half of the town was leaving because the biggest employer had fired half of his employees.
Wow.
Because they made chainsaws. It was McCulloch chainsaws.
Yeah.
And half of the people were leaving, she was in terrible feelings because, as she said to me, "Honey, I don't have any money to buy the children's shoes to start school."
Yeah, that's when optimism is certainly difficult to come by, I would think.
That's right. That's right. So we talked about it, and she said to me, "Jerry, if you want to stay, I'll stay with you." I looked at her and I said, "Honey, you'll never have to worry about money again." I went to work at 7 in the morning, and I didn't get home until 5:36 for dinner, and then I'd go out again in the evening. I had a couple appointments in the evening.
Yeah.
And I saved money. I never told her what I was saving, but I saved approximately 20% of my income. That didn't include the 401k that I had in the office.
Or
that sort of thing. But however much I made, if I made more than I needed to put away in the 401k, I put it away into some mutual funds, because that way I don't have to worry about it. If you put money into stock, that's what I do now. But boy, every day I have to look at that. You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. Put it in mutual funds and let it ride.
Yeah, that's what I tried to do some paper trading a few years back. Unfortunately, I just did it on paper, and I kept losing so much money. I said, "This is not for me." But more power to you. There's a lot of money to be made if you know what you're doing. But
that's right. That's right. But
you've written a book called Getting to the Top, An Optimist Keys to Success in Business, Family, and Life. And it has very favorable Amazon customer reviews, and it may provide an inspiration to our listeners. How's the book about? Is it an autobiography? But it's also a success blueprint for others, isn't it? Or
I wrote it after I retired about 3 years ago because I knew that what had happened to me and what my ways of living would help other people if they didn't know why they weren't making, they weren't saving money for the future for a rainy day, or they weren't eating the right food, or they weren't paying attention to their children or their wife, you know.
Balance is so important in life, and
that's right.
You even have
it
a chapter
is very
on
important.
That. You know, what I like about Jerry's book is he goes through a long biography of stories from his own experience, but then at the end of the book you have a whole lot of helpful practical advice on retirement and savings options like IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401ks, insurance, pensions, annuities, a whole bunch of information in the back of the book as well. I think that's a great combination.
Definitely, definitely. You definitely, people have told me that it's changed their life. Alex in Phoenix wrote me that he's going to pay more attention to his family and to his career.
Yeah.
He hasn't been doing what he had to do to be successful.
No, I love one customer review said, a story of a man who took everything that was thrown his way, be it good or bad, and it turned into something that moved his life forward in a positive direction. And that's really a great formula for all of us to follow. And I would add to that, move it in a positive direction both for ourselves and for our family and loved ones and all those people we're in contact with and have an opportunity to serve. Well, where should we go to preview and purchase your book, Getting to the Top?
Well, my website, familyandcareersuccess.com.
Oh, I see. And they can also...
Familyandcareersuccess.com. Yeah. I give you a 30% discount.
Oh,
the book,
I see.
Big course, $16.07. That's cheap enough, but I do want as many people to get the help they can get from the book. And I follow up. I follow up if they give me their name and address or an email.
Yeah.
I follow up and I help them with what to eat, how to take care of children, all that kind of thing. I follow up with that, and I follow up with businesses also.
That's great. But, you know, it's so often you read a book and then don't really follow up and implement anything you've read, and it's great that you have that follow-up. That's an added bonus that really sounds
great. You want to help people.
Well, in conclusion, I trust this spring your marriage is in great shape and growing stronger day by day, and I'm certain you'll want to keep it that way. But if for whatever reason your relationship has hit a rough spot, take heed to the tips today from our expert, Jerry Springberg, a fellow who's been there and done that. He sustained and strengthened a marriage through good times and bad for over 54 years. And in a broader context, think how wonderful it would be to approach all aspects of your life like Jerry does as an optimist. Think of all the hurt, pain, and stress you could avoid, both for yourself and for others. And if, like me, from a few years ago, you need help in reviving the positive, I recommend you preview his book, Getting to the Top, An Optimist's Key to Success in Business, Family, and Life. And you may want to read that along with my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, because both books contain a blueprint for success and joy in your life, in your middle years and into the future. And you can preview my book on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or MiddleAgeRenewal.com, our own website. And you can preview Jerry's book on FamilyAndCareerSuccess.com, like he said. And thank you, Jerry Springberg, for joining us. And best of success in getting your message out that optimism is the best way to approach your marriage and your life.
Thank you, Roy. Best wishes to you. And many more years of good relationship.
Yeah, and please tune in next week when our guest will talk about reinvention of a new, improved you. And that's it for today. Thank you for joining us on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.